From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. In September 1957 in Little Rock, Arkansas, 9 black students marched through a hostile white crowd. They entered Central High School and the history books. But first they had to deal with Arkansas Governor Orville Faubus. He called in the state's National Guard to stop the integration, even though the Supreme Court had ordered it. Then President Eisenhower stepped in. He ordered the U.S. Army to escort the group known as the Little Rock Nine to their first day of school. They made it inside on September 25th. But the struggle of the Little Rock Nine didn't end once they'd enrolled. Many white students attacked and taunted the black students. One black student was expelled from Central for fighting back. Families of the Nine were chased out of town. Only a third of the original students graduated from Central. I spoke earlier with 3 of the Little Rock Nine. Melba Beals is chair of the Communications Department at Dominican University of California. She's author of the award-winning memoir, Warriors Don't Cry. Terrence Roberts is a professor of psychology at Antioch University in Los Angeles, and Elizabeth Eckford is a probation officer in Little Rock. She's the single black student in that famous photo taken on her first day at Central. You can see that picture if you go to our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. Ms. Eckford told me what it was like to be surrounded by the angry crowd.
I was terrified, but what amazes me now is that there are people who call themselves spokesmen for that class year, and they say that those people were from someplace else. They don't know where those people came from, and they must be from out of town. It must have been part of a caravan that came here. But and no attempts to identify people was made by the local press. But since then, some have become known. The girl immediately behind me in that iconic photograph is named Hazel Bryan Messery. As a student, she was Hazel Bryan, and she did attend Central, but she left sometime in October.
And you developed a relationship in adult life. Tell me about that.
I met her in 1997. We were brought together by the photographer who took the original picture. I had talked to her in 1963 on the phone, but at the time I didn't know which of the girls behind me she was. She called to apologize. And in the 2 years we spent together, we spoke to students who came to Little Rock to learn about that part of the civil rights movement. Unfortunately, Hazel said she had amnesia about that, and she didn't remember anything. But over a period of time, when she was relaxed, I came to understand that she had contact with those students every Saturday on a local dance show, and that she was part of an organized group that attacked us physically in the school.
It was a situation where even when the National Guard was following you around, they stood back several paces. Professor Roberts, what do you remember about that, those kinds of attacks that Ms. Eckford was talking about?
Well, they were constant, and even with the guards present, it was possible for kids to simply race up behind us and push, shove, kick, spit, or whatever, and then take off running. So they devised many, many ways. The main goal was to try to force us out.
And it was allowed to continue because the principal said we were to report incidences, but he wouldn't do anything about it if a teacher didn't verify what we said.
Well, just remember, we called him Smiling Jess Matthews. He had a perpetual smile. If you told him that you had a colleague lying on the floor being kicked in the stomach, I remember one day reporting that. I think it was Terry or Ernie being kicked in the stomach. And he had the most angelic smile. But he did nothing. He didn't write it down. He didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. He just listened and smiled.
I remember that the superintendent was always urging us not to talk to the press. His was the first book out.
I think until Warriors, my book, Warriors Don't Cry, came out, people didn't realize the extent to which we were tortured daily, like the consistent walking on the back of my heels. When I step off a curb today, the backs of my Achilles hurt because there was a guy trained to do that every day from class to class. My eyes are not what they could be because the guy trained to put acid in the eye. So it was a trained, it was a formidable, it was a structured kind of behavior. But of course, I think all 3 of us do, we think that those guards were instrumental in saving us in terms of those early kinds of acts, which were most vicious.
I mean,
for 25 to 30 years, none of us talked about what it was like inside school. So that some of the students are dismayed. Their concern is how other people view them, those people who turn their backs and wouldn't even acknowledge what they saw or heard.
It's true.
They want to be congratulated for having tolerated us.
But the reality is, when I wrote the book, for example, I cried for months and months and months. Took 6 to 7 years of therapy to get to the core of the whole thing, because we were so instructed not to let it be known how we really felt, not to cry out, not to ask for help. And those instructions were what really helped to thread us through. But in another way, they quieted a part of us that needed to be heard.
Professor Roberts, did you have, and I'm wondering if this is in any way gendered, it sounds like all of you had to kind of just hide yourselves so that you could survive. Was it any different for the boys than the girls, or was it all part of the same?
No difference at all. We were under those same constraints. I think everybody wanted to sort of put the best face on this thing at the time. Nobody was willing to really confront the major issues that were going on, especially the stuff that we were facing inside the school.
What did you do when you went home? Every day when you left Central High and you went home to your family, did you have to decompress? How did your family treat you? Did they try to comfort you?
I dared not tell my parents, because my mother, who I call the Queen of No, was an overly protective parent, and she would not have let me continue. So I never told them. My father was 85 when I showed him the first documentary. My mother died in 1992.
I think that's the same for all of us, that we could talk sometimes to each other, but not even to each other. But we couldn't talk to our parents about the truth. Because we knew the result of that. The result of that would be we'd be pulled out of the school, and the tasks that we had set for ourselves, that had been set for us, the agenda set for us. Just like Martin Luther King said, you're not doing this for yourself. You're doing it for generations yet unborn.
But do you ever feel that you sacrificed yourselves for a goal that has not yet been realized or that has been thwarted?
There's so much of a difference between now and then. I have difficulty getting students to understand what segregation was like. Yes, there's much, much more to do, but life has changed very much because of the civil rights movement.
Yeah. And I feel that what we did, hey, you know what we did? We made them an offer they couldn't refuse. Up to then, it would have been, please let me come to your school on our knees. That offer made on that field changed history, and it takes me from the age 65 to look back and see the reality of it. It takes me from an age where I've been a professor now for 10 years teaching it to look back on it and say, you know what? Yes, we have moved forward. We have moved forward enormously.
Well, Professor Roberts, many of you, all of you on some level, have become educators. And when you are working in an educational context, how do you transmit to young students the importance of what happened, and how do you tell them that they should relate to it?
Actually, I talk to them about maintaining very high levels of self-awareness so that they can be very clear about who they are as people, and each one of us is simply a product of the cultural milieu from which we emanate. Many students don't have an awareness, though, of that whole process, so that's step one in a process of really understanding what's needful by way of change. And then we talk about what they can do as individuals and as parts of groups in a society.
Now, the three of you, when you get together with all of the other people who integrated Central High, what kind of, you're part of this ongoing celebration, but what kind of internal conversations are you having with each other about this moment in time, about what you've been through?
We become our real selves. Jefferson Thomas was a very, very funny person, but the people at Central didn't see that. Ernest Green was a very sociable person, and that was not shown. We just sort of withdrew within ourselves.
And
so we become our real
selves. Yeah, Terry Roberts is funny. He whistles a lot, and I was in the first grade with him, okay? And he's not changed enormously from being this very quiet, spiritual guide for us. And so when we come together, we're like a family. We're like brothers and sisters who haven't seen each other. And we fall into almost, from my perspective, some of the same roles we held when we were in school.
Yeah, we truly are a group.
Let me ask you about the Gina 6 case. A lot of people now with the massive protest are comparing this to the civil rights era. In what ways do you think that comparison is accurate, and in what ways is it not?
Well, I think Gina points out the fact that in this country we have yet to really tackle the basic issue, and that is the underlying roots of racism in this country that give rise to that sort of thing that happened in Gina, that give rise to James Byrd being dragged by a truck in Texas, and et cetera, et cetera. Always you will have this until and unless we confront that basic issue.
I remember that because of the dramatic images that people around the world saw of an ugly reality of Little Rock and America, that is the reason that President Eisenhower reluctantly finally acted, because this was during the time of the Cold War. And so that's when he took federal control of the Arkansas National Guard and sent paratroopers here, because then he said mob rule could not prevail. But before, his conversation was that this is something up to the states to settle.
Right, a local issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
So, Professor Beals, you actually had to leave the area. Your whole family had to leave. Tell me why.
Well, I think all of us left because the Klan at the time was writing, 10,000 down, 10,000 dead, 5 alive. There were hints of all sorts of rue things to our families. Several of the parents have been fired. My mother, I believe, Gloria Ray Kallmark's parents. Everybody's parents, Terry, I think your parents, everybody's parents suffered. I think Mrs. Eckford did too. Everybody's parents were suffering from this, and the children were being told, don't ever go back to this school again.
That's
and so we had no choice but to get out.
Of us who remained in Little Rock. Had all of us left, a suit that the NACB had pending would have gone moot.
Exactly. So the four brave souls remained behind to carry on that suit.
But some families had no choice but to leave.
But probably, too, the closure of the schools prompted some departure.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
Because public high schools were all closed for the following school year.
That was Terrence Roberts, Melba Beals, and Elizabeth Eckford